You're listening to BGN Radio.
Why would you listen to any other Eagles podcast
with John Stolmus and Brandon Lee Gowell? Welcome into BGN Radio. This is episode 67, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist, here with the supreme leader of BGN, Brandon Lee Gowton. May he forever reign. BLG, day four of training camp is in the books. How you doing, brother?
Mike, the season is back on after being canceled the last time I talked to you, so that's very good news. I'm glad that, nice. You know, Carson Wentz looked better. He bounced back today. We'll get into that. But just the fact that, you know, he's on the rebound, the season is back on, I think it's fair to say Super Bowl.
I agree, and it's a good thing we're not being reactionary either. These takes have taken a while to kind of formulate, and kind of it's good that we're back in the race for the Super Bowl. And before we get into it, I just want to put out some quick programming notes here. Earlier today on Fireside Chats 14, you'll see that's in the feed, I talked with Derek Klassen of Football Outsiders. He wrote the Eagles chapter for the 2019 Football Almanac for them, so we dig into the past and project the future for the Eagles in that one. Tomorrow, I am recording with the squirrely Benjamin Solak for the second installment of our Eye on the Enemy Rams edition. Also, I'm supposed to be talking with Evan Silva of EstablishTheRun.com. We'll have fresh press conferences coming for you, as well as Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz were at the podium today. So a ridiculous amount of content for you here on this feed. And if you aren't subscribed yet, smash the subscribe button, leave five stars, write a funny review, whatever you want to do, and make sure you're following BGN_radio on Twitter to keep up to date with the bevy of shows that we're releasing as we ramp up towards the 2019 season. And part of that ramp up is our coverage of the Eagles training camp, and that's what we're here to do today. BLG, first on the docket has to be the budding connection between Carson Wentz and the returning DeSean Jackson. I feel like we talk about it a lot, but there's a reason for that. Number one, it's new, and it's also incredibly exciting. And each day, it feels like they're building better and better chemistry. Tell me about what you saw today from those two.
Yeah, really encouraging to see Carson Wentz and DeSean Jackson getting on the same page, especially after we talked about those struggles in Saturday's practice, especially with the deep ball. I mean, going back to the spring practices, I feel like Carson and DeSean, like one of the things we were talking about here on BGN Radio was the fact that already, in such a short amount of time, they're really already on the same page. And they did connect on some deep attempts in the spring, but there were some issues on this past Saturday that you had seen Carson overthrowing DeSean twice. So it was very nice to see them get on the same page today. You had Carson making some just really good throws. DeSean just clearly not losing any speed, even though he's going to be 33 this season. I mean, there was a play, Mike, where Carson just hits DeSean on a short little screen and DeSean gets a block. And like, there's just open field in front of him, and it's a touchdown. Like, how is it not going to be a touchdown? Because who's going to catch him from behind? The answer is nobody. So that's just really cool to see those two guys already getting connected. The Alshon thing, deep. There was an issue with that today still, though. Carson did throw a pick to Rasul Douglas. It was a one-handed pick on an overthrow. Sewell, good play by him. Want to give him credit, but also, you know, clearly an overthrow by Carson. You know, that's something we've been talking about monitoring this offseason. I feel like those two still maybe, you know, not are on the same page fully. I think in the intermediate passing game, and underneath even, like, that's all good. That seems to be the timing there seems to be good with Alshon and Carson Wentz. But in terms of the deep passing game, it just, like, it's not exactly where you want it to be. And that's not, you know, pushing the panic button right now, because there's still all of camp and preseason to kind of work on that. And as I've said, like, at literally every episode this offseason, this is their first full offseason. We're actually being able to practice with each other. So you would hope that kind of helps. But overall, I thought it was just good for Carson to, you know, kind of bounce back. And even that interception he had was early in practice. So having this bad practice kind of on Saturday and then making that mistake early today, but then like being locked in after that and bouncing back and not letting it ruin the whole day for him, just an encouraging sign for me.
Yeah, and that's a good note on Alshon. It'll be great, you know, with DeSean getting all the hype for being the deep threat that he is, he's going to command some over-the-top attention, and you can't always have two deep safeties. Alshon Jeffrey is going to get some favorable matchups, so it'll be great if they can get on the same page and get that chemistry going as well. But it'll be big for the offense. And looking at how Wentz did overall, it's good to get the perspective from those on the outside looking in, and Dan Orlovsky was there and said, quote, "At the Eagles training camp practice, Carson Wentz is putting on a dang clinic of anticipation and ball placement and touch and zip and all the things that pertain to flat out dealing in all caps, dealing in all caps. So unquote there. So big day for Carson after an up and down day on Saturday, which is exactly what you want to see from the franchise quarterback. And look, speaking of bounce back days, you also wrote that Nelson Aguilar stepped up his game today. What did you think about his performance and how is that wide receiver group shaping up?
Yeah, Nelson just kind of looked uncoverable in the slot, which is nice to see. He definitely beat Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox and basically whoever they were throwing in there at the nickel position. So that was nice to see. I think that's one thing Carson did well too today, which isn't surprising. And his even his biggest critics will give you that he can work the middle of the field and maybe too much sometimes. But that was definitely an area that he was locked in today, whether it was finding Zach Ertz or Dallas Goedert. Or notably, Nelson Aguilar, again, who didn't do so well on Saturday, but kind of bounced back today. Just encouraging to see. And really, you know, when we talk about this whole thing about, like, are there too many mouths to feed? Is Carson going to be able to, you know, distribute the ball evenly so it's keeping everyone happy? These kind of talking points. I thought that's what he did today. Like, he spread the ball around. Obviously, he was finding Deshaun over and over, but I mean, who can blame him? If Deshaun's going to be wide open down the field, you want him taking those shots when they're there. So overall, just, you know, pretty encouraging to see the offense humming, looking in sync for the most part. And I don't think it's just like simply bad defense too. Like, it just seemed like good offensive execution for the most part.
That's excellent. And looking at this wide receiver group, we haven't talked much about Mac Hollins since he's kind of returned to reality. I think I heard someone say, it might have been like Bull Wolf or somebody like that, saying he needs to hold up like a newspaper with the date on it when he's there. But based on what you've seen so far from Mac, and look, it's still early, obviously, but do you think Hollins is a lock for wide receiver 5? Or could he be challenged by another, maybe somebody like Braxton Miller? And there's so many weapons. I'm challenging myself on the wide receiver 5 thing. So let's see. Alshon Jeffrey, Deshaun Jackson, Nelson Aguilar, check. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Am I missing anybody? Who's going to make this roster?
I think it's going to be Mac Hollins as your number 5, assuming he's healthy. And now the latest on Mac Hollins is that he did not practice today on Monday, which, you know, isn't great because, having that injury history for so long before this point. Doug Peterson said it was not related to the groin, which I guess is a good thing. Mac Hollins apparently in the locker room said that he should be back in a day or two. I take that with a grain of salt because Mac Hollins also said that he thought he should be ready for the Week 1 opening game against the Falcons last year. And then he was placed on injured reserve and didn't play the whole season and really didn't start practicing until training camp. So yeah, I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm just saying I don't really know what to believe for sure and how much you can take what he says at face value. So I'm hopeful. I hope to see Mac Hollins back soon. And when he has been out there, it's not like overly impressive in the sense of like he's making these highlight plays all the time, but he's looked good. Like he's catching the ball when it's thrown to him. He looks like healthy and fast when he's been on the field. So I definitely think he makes this team as a 5th receiver, especially because he has that background for being a special teams demon kind of contributor guy, whatever you want to call it, special teams ace. So I think the fact that, you know, he has that going for him really helps. I mean, he has to stay healthy. You know, that's the big thing. That's, I guess, the only kind of reason why he wouldn't be on the team is if he just can't stay healthy. Braxton Miller actually had his best day of literally the entire offseason today because I noticed him a couple times. But other than that, he's been invisible. So I can't see it. And he's practicing like 3rd, 4th string. So he seems to be way down the depth chart. The other guys to watch for that kind of, you know, maybe 5th, 6th receiver spot, or like a Charles Johnson, who is obviously a veteran guy and has experienced the AAF's all-time leading receiver. Had a better spring than I would say a camp so far. Haven't noticed him as much. Then you have Shelton Gibson, who dropped a routine pass today. His hand's kind of still an issue. And then you have a guy like Greg Ward, who was getting some first-team reps, but I really don't think, you know, that's going to be much of a thing. So I don't even know if they keep 6. They might just keep 5, and Mac, I would say, is probably going to be that guy.
Yeah, a lot of guys hanging around that have hung around for a while on the outside looking in right now with all the talent at this wide receiver position. So wide receiver 5 is still something to look at here. Hopefully Mac can get back healthy. Going back to the guys that are dealing to the wide receivers, let's go back to the quarterbacks for a second here. Nate Sudfeld, Clayton Thorson, Cody Kessler. How did the trio of backups look today? Because from what I heard, Thorson had like one of the worst passes in camp history, and that's saying something.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Kemsky who said that, I believe. And I mean, Clayton Thorson just hasn't had a good offseason, Mike. Again, I think of that one OTA recap I did with you and literally the first day, and I was like, didn't look so bad. That was easily his best day, and that wasn't even like overly great. It was just like, okay, he didn't totally suck that day, but man, he's been bad since. Today, I just remember two passes that went towards the sideline where the ball was just like extremely overthrown. Receiver didn't have a chance to make a play inbounds. And the ball's really wobbling in the air too. I wonder if that's something the Eagles do with the with their quarterbacks in terms of mechanics, because I remember Carson really having a wobbly throw as a rookie early on in his career. So I don't know if that's related or what, but Clayton Thorson definitely throwing a wobbly ball right now. And the throw that Jimmy was talking about was basically like an arm punt. Like he threw it and it looked like it could have been a punt because like there was enough time for everyone to like get like face forward, you know, like towards like back towards the line of scrimmage and wait for the ball to get there. So just really, really not good from him. I would say Cody Kessler, who didn't look so good in the spring practices, and in fairness to him, you know, he only signed with the team like I think a week or so before OTA, so he didn't have a ton of time to get into the playbook before he really got the reps live. He's looked okay. Like I think he's looked better than Clayton Thorson, and I would almost describe the situation as like I'm thinking, Mike, they're going to keep Clayton Thorson on the team. I'm kind of hoping they do, and just in the sense of like you took this guy with a fifth round pick when you only had five picks. So he better be this like developmental project at that point. But like I think if it was a situation, God forbid, where Carson Wentz went down for an extended period of time and Nate Sudfeld is your starter, I don't think we'll see how they feel. Me personally, I don't feel like, you know, comfortable with Clayton Thorson as the number two at that point. I think they would like re-sign Cody Kessler and make him the two and Thorson. So the point of that, all that being like, I don't think there's any way like Thorson sees the field this year. He just seems like way, way not ready for that.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. Thorson was like my least favorite pick of all of them, having done the pre-draft work on him. Kessler has starting experience in the NFL, and whether he's great, bad, average, or otherwise, that's more than Thorson has right now. So I was going to ask, you know, do you think Thorson gets subjected to the practice squad? Because each day it seems safer and safer in regard to the possibility of him not being poached, which isn't a good thing, but it's a thing.
Yeah, I guess I would feel like no one's going to go after Kessler hard. So like, again, you could kind of keep Thorson on the roster. And like, if there was an injury and you had to re-sign Kessler, I think you could. I don't think they would want to expose Thorson to possibility of some other team trying to just take a shot on him in the case of, you know, them cutting him just because they've already invested this resource and they seemingly have some kind of vision for him. Although, as you and Ben have said here on BGN Radio and myself, like, I don't think any of us were fans of that pick, not even just from like an evaluation side, but also like a process side. It's like, what's the upside here? Like the best case outcome is that he can be like an okay backup, I guess, behind Carson Wentz next year if Nate Sudfeld leaves in free agency.
Right.
Which, like, is that even a guarantee? Like, what if Sudfeld doesn't get like what he wants in terms of like at least to compete for a starting job? So I don't know. Just not looking like an awesome pick right now.
Let's stay with the offense for one more and kind of, I guess. Did I read that Miles Sanders was getting some work as a returner today?
He was a kick returner. Now, he did some of that at Penn State. I believe 38 career returns over his three seasons there with the Nittany Lions. Not really a great returner in that regard, that he only had like 20.1 yards per kick return. So I don't think he's some dynamic weapon there, but he was getting looks along with some of the other, like a Boston Scott or a Donald Pumphrey, those kind of running backs. I'm sure Corey Clement could get some looks there. He could potentially be the main guy once he gets healthy in the regular season. But on the Miles Sanders note, I will switch, Mike, to the backfield, the much more exciting use of Miles Sanders, because when you see Miles Sanders run, like, he is so clearly a different kind of running back in the sense of, like, this guy has shiftiness and, like, explosiveness, and you just don't see that same kind of, like, dynamic ability from any of the other Eagles running backs. Like, he is very unique in that regard. Like, you can just see it. Like, you can watch a play. Before the play, let's say like you didn't even know who the running back was, but you're just looking at the play, and based on how the play goes and how the run goes, like, okay, that's Miles Sanders, just because that's like what he has. You know, he's been mixing in with the first team. I still think Jordan Howard is getting most of the looks there, and that's probably not an accident, and I still think that's how it's going to go, especially at least early on in the season with Jordan Howard kind of being that 1A in the rotation, whereas Sanders is kind of more of the 1B. So I kind of think that's where it's at right now.
So that is encouraging to hear about Miles Sanders. Definitely a different type of back than a Jordan Howard in terms of explosiveness, burst, and lateral agility and all those things. So hopefully he's able to make his stamp on this team sooner than later. So That's the offensive side of the ball. We're going to get to the defensive side of the ball after the break here on BGN Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back on BGN Radio, episode 67, brought to you by SB Nation, Bleeding Green Nation. Michael Kist here with Brandon Lee Gouten, who had boots on the ground at the NovaCare Complex. We already covered the offense. Let's switch it to the defensive side of the ball. And we'll go front to back, starting with two players on the interior of the defense. You wrote that Timmy Jernigan is looking healthy, and Hassan Ridgeway, the former Colts player that the Eagles traded for during the draft, made a splash play. How's the depth shaking out in the teeth of this defense?
Yeah, really good and really encouraging to see Timmy Jernigan healthy. He's obviously getting some or all the looks with the first team, given that Fletcher Cox isn't doing team drills yet. So good to see Jernigan still have that explosiveness. You know, he really fired into the backfield today to tackle Jordan Howard, who, you know, say what you will about Jordan Howard, but, you know, he's a big dude. Like, he's strong. He's physical. So for Timmy Jernigan to take him down in the backfield like that isn't just, like, the easiest thing in the world. It's not like he's taking down Boston Scott or Donnell Pumphrey. Good job by Timmy Jernigan to do that. And also love the energy that he brings, again, taunting the offense and dancing after making that play.
They're a rambunctious group. I love it.
They are. I love that. I love, like, I was talking about that with Vinny on Saturday's podcast. They play with a lot of energy. And I think there's something to be said for that. I think they kind of, like, they have fun, basically. And you want your guys having fun. That's good to see. And yeah, with Ridgeway, he's kind of been getting some gas a little bit from the coaching staff. I know Jim Schwartz has mentioned him, like, at least twice now. The Eagles obviously had some kind of eye for him in the sense that they traded a pick for him. It was a very late seventh round pick, but still, you know, like, they went out and actively pursued him. So they have some kind of interest. I definitely think he's kind of on the bubble. Like, I don't know for sure if he's making the roster 100%, but I think the Eagles want to be deep, obviously, at that defensive tackle and really at defensive end too. They want to be deep on the defensive line. So they're certainly not going to be averse to keeping extra guys at those spots. And Ridgeway could be one of those guys who kind of sneaks on and gets some playing time in the defensive end rotation. Might even be out playoff hero Trayvon Hester. Not sure, but I don't think that's impossible.
Yeah, and Ridgeway was a guy that Indianapolis liked, but he just couldn't crack the rotation there. And he's only 24 years old. And I was going to ask you if you were to write the 53-man roster prediction right now, if he would be on or not. But it sounds like he's firmly on the bubble. So that's a situation to monitor in terms of, you know, who makes it out of that backup group there. As a follow-up, are there any other notes from either the interior or the edge players worth speaking about here that happened today at training camp?
The new Steven Means, Joe Osman himself. Like what I saw at him today, definitely beat Jordan Mailata, who was playing right tackle during 11-on-11. Nice move to get inside on Mailata and force some pressure on Nate Sudfeld. I would say he got there in time for the, you know, quote-unquote sack. Obviously no contact with the quarterback in these kind of drills, but he got there in good time. Osman also had a nice tackle for no gain in run defense, so he's been active. Again, a guy who probably, in my opinion, doesn't really make the roster. And even if he does, he's what, your like fifth defensive end. But I think he can be a very valuable, at the least, like a practice player for the Eagles, a guy who gives a lot of effort in practice and is not going to, you know, make things easy for the offensive line. And hopefully they can kind of appreciate that, like the Eagles did with Steven Means, you know, who would go hard as hell against the offensive line in practice. And Lane Johnson would say, like, he would appreciate that because it would give him, it would push him, basically, and it would give him good looks depending on the matchup they would go against. And Steven Means would try to replicate the pass rusher that the Eagles were going to face, and Osman was kind of that guy last year. So you can kind of see why he gets some buzz and the coaching staff likes him. He can kind of do some things. I also saw Deshaun Hall just absolutely just like obliterate Ryan Bates, who was playing left tackle. He put him on the ground basically like right after the ball was snapped. So that's kind of, you know, I think Bates, you know, Ben has talked about that's a guy the Eagles consider drafting. They like him. He might be better suited for some kind of interior role.
Definitely, yeah.
But the Eagles are trying him out at offensive tackle, left tackle specifically for now. There are some struggles out there, so I will say that.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that you want to kick in, but he does have experience as a tackle. So even if it's bad, you know, they like that versatility. It'll give you something a little bit more along that offensive line. I really like the matchup between Joe Osman and Mailata, because Osman, while not like the most craziest athlete, a very technically sound type player going against a green guy like Mailata, whose progress we're obviously going to be tracking through all of this. And let's go to the linebacker position. We'll go to the second piece of the three, you know, different levels to the defense. I had a buddy of mine that's connected to the Stanford program ask me about Joey Alfieri's chances to make the roster. So I'll ask that here, and I'll throw in the Wisconsin linebacker TJ Edwards, the undrafted guy who impressed during rookie minicamp. You think either of these guys got a chance, BLG, considering the depth at linebacker right now?
I would say Alfieri, no chance. I would say Edwards, like he's kind of, if I had to make my roster today, I'd probably leave him off. But I think he's like in the bubble conversation. I mean, the Eagles gave him the most guaranteed money out of all their undrafted free agent signings. You know, there was thought that TJ Edwards could get drafted. So, you know, it's not like he's just coming out of absolutely nowhere. Saw some good things from him in the spring. Saw him being physical today and really since the pads have gone on. So I've seen some nice things from him. I don't think it's enough necessarily to be on the roster just yet. But hey, like Paul Warlow's hurt. You know, we know the LJ Fort comp pick thing is a consideration to be had. If Edwards really steps up, you know, he can make his case. I think at the very least, he's going to be on the practice squad. And there's a path to him potentially, especially if injuries happen at that position, where he might be able to sneak on to the roster. I would say the biggest thing right now, Mike, at linebacker is the play of our own favorite Kamu Grugier-Hill. You know, I think I've already talked about this with you, but he's stepped up, in my opinion, in a significant way. I think, you know, right now it's really looking like he's going to be that second linebacker behind Nigel Bradham in terms of snaps played. You know, we know the Eagles really only use two linebackers for the most part. I think Kamu is going to be that guy right now. And it's a big year for him because he's going into a contract year. So this is like a really big opportunity for him to have a nice season. And he might price himself out of the Eagles range, unfortunately. That would be very unfortunate to me. I would love to keep Kamu around. But, you know, kind of him evolving from not only the special teams leader, and obviously he was the special teams captain last year, and he's led the team in special teams tackles over the past couple seasons now, kind of becoming this contributor, more of a significant fixture on defense, and really just kind of interesting because when you're looking at this roster, you know, maybe more so from an outside perspective or just like a, you know, you're not paying attention to the Kamu thing, like you're thinking Zach Brown is going to be that guy because he has that reputation. I mean, you have Doug Farrar saying he's like one of the top 10 linebackers in the league. Like he wrote a post about that earlier this offseason. Like, so
we had Derek Klassen earlier today from Football Outsiders saying that he was one of the best linebackers in the league last year as well. So yeah. I think the perception outside of Philadelphia is Zach Brown's definitely getting the starting snaps, but Kamu has the coverage skills, the athleticism and all that stuff. If he puts it together, I really do think he has a shot to be a three down linebacker for the Eagles.
Yeah. So, and I don't think Brown will never play at all. I think it's kind of almost more of like, he's this team's Michael Kendricks in that he'll have some kind of role and he might even make some splash plays and it'll be like the Kendricks thing. Like, well, why isn't he playing more? And part of the answer to that, I think, would be that, first of all, like Kendricks, he doesn't really call a defense. He's never done that in his career. And the other thing is that, like, for as splashy as he can be, it might be a thing where the coaching staff thinks he's not always the most assignment sound player and a player they can kind of, you know, trust to be in the right spot always. So that's kind of where I'm kind of putting that at right now. Now, to be clear, you know, with Bradham not practicing, Zach Brown is on the field in base, but, you know, this team is not going to be in base most of the time.
Yeah, and as a Kamu truther, that's fantastic news. Everything we just covered there, he's making me look smart. All right, third level of the defense. The secondary was like already tough to project in terms of what the starting nickel package would look like, and nickel being essentially the Eagles' base defense, really. That hasn't become any easier in the last couple of days with the signing of cornerback Orlando Scandrick, the longtime Dallas corner who spent last year with the Chiefs. He's a longtime nickel corner, but last year he was outside with the Chiefs. I said this on Twitter, and I'm wondering your take on it. While I have my criticisms of Schwartz, I don't think he gets enough credit inside of Philadelphia for his willingness to adapt and experiment. And I really believe that this may bear itself out with the cornerback group this year in the regular season, with several players having inside, outside versatility training. They're firmly in the mix for a matchup and situational roles. I guess the best way to put this is, and I don't expect this to be like an every down type thing, but are we headed towards more specialization with this cornerback position headed into the season, where it's less about ingrained starters and more about playing matchups and situations? Because that's kind of the feel that I'm getting with how the rotation has worked this camp while they search for permanent answers there.
I think that's a good assessment, Mike, because I think you can think of the same way in offense. Like, you can say that, you know, you're not necessarily going to play J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, you know, in this huge role every week, but there might be a game where he gets a lot more playing time or more playing time than others. Or same thing with the running backs. Like, maybe it's a certain week where you're feeling better about having a more physical running back in Jordan Howard as opposed to a flashy guy like Miles Sanders. So I think that can apply to the defense too. I think it might not always get thought about that way, but I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think when you look at a Jim Schwartz defense and you look at his philosophy on things, he's talking about how, and the way he really puts things into action, executes things, like, he wants more defensive backs on the field, ideally, than, you know, bigger linebackers. That's why you see the Eagles play so much nickel and dime.
Yeah.
And why Corey Graham was on this team for way too long. So they're going to, you know, want more defensive backs on the field, and they have the options. Like, that's part of the thing. Like, they're running out a lineup right now that seems pretty passable, right? In terms of Sidney Jones looking good, Avante Maddox, we know what he can do, and Rasul Douglas, who I think has had a very good offseason, and picking right up where he left off in the regular season and the playoffs, even last year when he was playing well. And that's, you know, not even factoring in Ronald Darby, who, when he's playing at his best, I think is, you know, is a very good cornerback. And even if you don't, like, if you, like, this team thinks that, you know, they paid him for a reason, not just to sit the bench. And then you have Jalen Mills in the mix as well. So, and for all his faults, and he definitely has some, we know he's really good in the red zone. Like, the numbers bear that out. So I definitely think that's possible. They can kind of mix and match these guys, figure things out. And that's part of what, you know, the offseason is for, like, kind of playing with different lineups. And the Eagles did that again today, where for the most part, it was Maddox on the outside and Rasul Douglas on the outside with Sidney Jones in the slot. But they went to a base rep where it was Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas as your outside corner. So they're definitely mixing and matching things. And I think they're trying to see what works best.
Absolutely. Anything else on the defensive side of the ball, or just in general from your observations from the day to day before we get out of here?
Yeah. So Skandrick, you know, is with the second team nickel defense. The Craven LeBlanc injury, you know, that's kind of interesting to me in the sense of
so many parallels with Mills, right?
Yeah. You never know what to think, because Jalen Mills last year in week 8 against the Jaguars reportedly suffered a quote unquote foot sprain, and he was quote unquote week to week. And ultimately
in Doug speak.
Yeah. In Doug speak, which, you know, typically isn't a good thing, because Richard Rodgers was also week to week in the preseason after the second preseason game, and he didn't come back till like halfway through the regular season. So going back to the Mills strap thing, though, like, same terminology, week to week, both foot sprain, apparently, in terms of reports. You know, Doug Peterson didn't officially say what it was, and he won't, because he's not going to divulge that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird to me. Like, when I see these reports that, like, Craven could be back for week 1, like, okay, maybe, but looking at the history of what happened with Jalen Mills, and I get, you know, they're different players, they're different people, the extent of the injury could be different, but, like, it's just, I don't think we should just assume 100% that Craven will be ready for week 1, especially with the Eagles, you know, going out and not only claiming Alex Brown on waivers, who's just a camp body, but still, like, they did enough, you know, they were, something sparked them to both get a cornerback, even if he's just a camp body, and then also go out and get Orlando Skandrick, who, you know, you have to look at it from his perspective. Like, did he really come here to Philly just to eat up reps in training camp?
Because he worked out with the Vikings as well, as we noted when it happened.
Yeah, so you know what I mean? Like, would he come, like, if it was just like, yeah, you have no chance of making the team? Like, I don't think so. I think you have to sell him in order to sign him, to get him to agree. You have to be like, well, you know, there is a chance for you to make this roster. So I think he's going to have that opportunity if Strap, you know, is going to be hurt here and miss some time, which wouldn't be ideal. You know, I think the ideal situation is that Orlando Skandrick does not make this team, because I think he's kind of just, you know, cooked for the most part at this point. Like, you know, I just don't think it's an ideal situation. I mean, he's wearing a long snapper's number right now, Mike.
I was going to ask, the jersey number analytics on 45 for a cornerback, what do you think about it?
I mean, that's terrible. I mean, like, he should be cut immediately. Like, how can you wear a long snapper's number? I mean, does he even know what position he's playing? He might think he is the long snapper. So kind of concerning. But yeah, that'll be kind of interesting to monitor to see, you know, does Orlando Skandrick actually make this team.
So we'll be following that throughout the week. When is the next day off for my own sanity and schedule here? What is it? Is it Friday? Is that the next time?
Is never, because hashtag no days off here at Weed Green Nation. and BGN Radio. But yes, so they'll have off Friday. So they have practice again Tuesday morning, 9:15. It'll be another full practice. And then Wednesday, it seems like a kind of a shorter day, might be a 10-10-10 day. And then Thursday, they'll have another practice. And I imagine one of these next 3 days, we might see them go live because they're going to go live at some point here. Maybe it'll be right before that break on Friday. So that'll be something to definitely watch out for as well. And as always, we'll have coverage of it here on BGN Radio and BleedingGreenNation.com. So make sure you keep tuned to those.
That's going to do it for BGN Radio episode 67. Like BLG, we got a full week ahead of us. And we're rolling right into the preseason, man. The first preseason game is August 1st. The Hall of Fame game is so very close. Real football action coming your way very soon. Make sure you keep it here on BGN Radio, and we'll catch you next time.
BGN.